Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan
with insurancebroker.ie
on News Talk.
Now, the Master of the National Maternity Hospital, Professor Shane Higgins, is with me in studio today to answer all of your questions related to pregnancy. Shane, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Andrea.
Thanks a million for joining us again. We are going to talk, though, about the tougher side of things today. We're going to talk in particular about miscarriage. We're going to talk about ectopic pregnancies.
Yeah.
And we also want to chat, Shane, about the fact that actually today is World Maternal Mental Health Day. And one of the most interesting things I found when looking at this morning, Shane, is the fact that up to 80% of new mothers will experience the baby blues in the early days after birth.
That's absolutely right, Andrea.
80%?
Yeah. It's typically a very joyous time for couples, but it is also a very stressful time. A new baby, breastfeeding, looking after the baby, ensuring, and particularly for first-time mums, and dads, it can be a very trying and tiring time, which leads to some symptoms related to the baby blues, as we call them these days.
Yeah, is that short-lived? Is it prolonged?
I think a day like today is used to promote services and raise awareness for mental health issues in pregnancy. And you alluded to the 80% experiencing baby blues, but one in five women will have a mental health illness related to or during pregnancy or up to the end of the first year after the birth of the baby. And that's a staggering statistic when you think about it. And a hospital like ours, a hospital like the National Maternity Hospital, has a very, very strong and busy perinatal mental health unit. It's got consultant, senior reg, midwives, mental health nurses, psychologists, social workers, occupational therapists. They all form part of this multidisciplinary team that's dedicated to looking after women with mental health issues in pregnancy. But there's a lot of resources out there for patients who are concerned about their mental health in pregnancy. And on our website, under the perinatal mental health tab, they'll find a document. We offer online classes, a monthly online class, one called Healthy Minds in Pregnancy and Beyond.
Okay.
And the second one then is Supporting Your Postnatal Emotional Wellbeing. So these are classes that you can dip your toe into. You don't have to have your camera on. It's an opportunity to kind of get information about mental health during and particularly after pregnancy. But if your symptoms that you feel are related to the postpartum blues are lasting more than a fortnight, or you think they're worsening, and particularly if your partner or other very close family members are concerned about your mental health, then you should contact a healthcare provider.
Yeah. And when we, you know, I suppose the phrase baby blues, you hear that a lot, but typically, from a clinical perspective, what does that relate to? What does that cover?
It relates to symptoms like, you know, being anxious, sleeplessness, low mood. And they're a lot of the same symptoms that you experience with anxiety, with postnatal depression. It's just the duration of those symptoms differs. If they last for that longer than 2 weeks to 4 weeks, then you should certainly be seeking additional help. Mm.
It's 80% of new mums will experience baby blues in the early days. This is just after the birth. But so the other side of this is that one in five women will experience a mental health issue during the pregnancy as well.
During or after, yeah.
Yeah, so it's about getting help. It's about knowing the supports that are there.
And typically the features will be consistent with the postnatal depression or an anxiety, a prolonged anxiety disorder. They're typical. Postnatal psychosis, the really severe end of the spectrum, they're very few and far between, thankfully, but they're all part of that spectrum of mental ill health that can occur either during. Mm. And if you have a history of mental health issues before pregnancy, you are more likely to experience a deterioration in those symptoms during or after.
Oh, really?
And it's very important that you're linked in. A lot of patients will come in pregnancy to the hospital, but they'll have a mental health team looking after them. But if you don't and you want some professional advice and care and support, then there are teams in many of the hospitals. We provide a service not just for the National Maternity Hospital, but for our network hospitals also. So, you know, the National Maternity Hospital will be a part of a network of maternity hospitals, including Kilkenny, Wexford, Waterford, South Tipperary. So we provide
support outreach, services, that are there for those too. Okay. We want to talk about ectopic pregnancies, miscarriage today. I should say 087 1400 106. That's the WhatsApp number if you have a question for Professor Shane Higgins this afternoon. We might start with the ectopic pregnancy first of all. And What is it?
So ectopic pregnancy refers to any pregnancy that isn't growing in the body of the uterus. And that's the main part of the uterus. So the uterus has the cervix and then the body. So if the pregnancy isn't growing in the body of the uterus, then it can be referred to as an ectopic pregnancy. Typically, and for the most part, patients will you know, be relating to a pregnancy in the fallopian tube. That's the most common ectopic pregnancy that we come across. But because of the rising cesarean section rate, we are seeing what are called scar ectopics, cervical ectopics. They are just where the pregnancy attaches to either the scar from a cesarean section or low down in the uterus on the cervix. But it's typically, again, as I said, the fallopian tube, but it can be even further afield. It can be in the ovary. It can implant somewhere into the abdominal cavity, and that's called an abdominal pregnancy. Either way, no matter where they are, if they're not in the body of the uterus, they're ectopic, they're abnormal, they don't lead to a successful pregnancy. And they can become a very severe, acute obstetric gynecological emergency that needs to be dealt with. And can be life-threatening.
I'm assuming there's no way to prevent this. It's just...
No, it's commoner in patients who are over 35, patients who have a history of pelvic inflammatory disease, have used the intrauterine device. So there are associations, but there's nothing you can do to stop you from developing an ectopic pregnancy. But it's very important if you have any of the features, and they would be a positive pregnancy test and then pain in either your right or left lower tummy with any bleeding. So that constellation of features would be an ectopic pregnancy until proven otherwise.
Okay, and it's surgery is the outcome, is it?
No, so again, so there are three courses of action depending on how advanced in pregnancy you are. Sometimes they you can have what's referred to as a tubal abortion, where the pregnancy just empties itself out of the fallopian tube into the abdominal cavity and reabsorb. But most commonly, it'll either be medical treatment with a drug called methotrexate, which stops the cells from dividing and causes the pregnancy to kind of stop growing, or the surgical route, which would be the removal of a fallopian tube.
And will it impact future ability to have more kids?
Well, it does increase your risk of having a further ectopic pregnancy. But if your fallopian tube has been removed, then there is that impact on your fertility, which and it can have an impact. But, you know, a lot of it is due to the underlying condition, whether it's pelvic inflammatory disease, endometriosis, that predisposes you to having an ectopic pregnancy.
Yeah. So if you've had an ectopic pregnancy,
yes,
there is a higher, greater chance.
Absolutely.
You could have it in a second or third time.
And all the more reason that if you've had one, that you seek medical attention early to ensure the pregnancy is in the correct place in the body of the uterus. And once that's been identified by ultrasound scan, then you've nothing further to worry about.
Moving on to miscarriage, we hear more and more frequently, Shane, you know, the statistics around this and the number of, I suppose, it's more common than
it is.
We realize,
and depending on what you read, you'll hear statistics as high as 20%. I suppose, you know, if you include patients who have a positive pregnancy test at home but never get to a hospital or have a late period, yeah, the figure can be that high. But once you get to a hospital, once you've identified a fetus in the uterus, a positive fetal heart, then your risk does go down. And you know, once you get to 12 weeks, your risk of miscarriage is at its lowest. But it is a very common occurrence. And I do say to my patients, if they're going through a tragedy like a miscarriage, if you talk to your friends and relatives, you'd be amazed at how many of them have also gone through something similar.
I just know from, you know, anecdotally from been hearing the show and talking to people, probably got a little better at chatting about it.
I think we have. I think there's a lot of very good support services there. And this comes back to the trauma of pregnancy loss. And we've got Birth Reflections midwife who will afford patients the opportunity just to talk about the experience that they've had. And I think being able to talk about it is very cathartic and therapeutic. And then seeing your healthcare provider. I mean, we've reduced, before, if you wanted to be investigated for miscarriage, you had to wait till you had three consecutive losses. Now that's been reduced to two. So patients can go and seek help, seek advice, seek treatments that might help them in a future pregnancy and prevent them from miscarrying. Treatments like aspirin, progesterone, which are now very commonly used in the context of miscarriage to help patients with a future pregnancy.
Listeners wondering, Shane, if we can ask Professor Higgins about Turner syndrome. I'm currently pregnant and I'm wondering, what are the chances of conceiving through IVF? What is that, first of all?
Well, Turner syndrome is a chromosomal abnormality where, so we all have 46 chromosomes and I have XY and you have XX. Turner syndrome patients have 45 chromosomes and have only one X chromosome. So So conceiving a Turner's pregnancy is a random event, as is conceiving a baby with any chromosomal abnormality, unless you're carrying some chromosomal imbalance in your own chromosomes, which facilitates this abnormality or an abnormality occurring. But for the most part, chromosomal abnormalities, aneuploidies as we refer to them, there's an age-related risk. The older the mother is, the greater the risk of having a baby with a chromosomal abnormality. That risk, in my opinion, doesn't really become significant until into your 40s.
Okay. Another texter is wondering, currently going through IVF with an embryo transfer tomorrow. I'm looking into my symptoms, but I think I may actually have undiagnosed endometriosis. I've low AMH, painful periods, excruciating bowel pain during my period, and I'm now worried that IVF can't work while I have endo and that my transfer might fail for this reason. So I want to ask Professor Higgins, are there any chances where IVF is successful even with endometriosis, or should it be removed before the IVF?
No. Well, first of all, best of luck tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow.
Secondly, absolutely. Go ahead with the transfer. Endometriosis typically is outside the uterus, involving the fallopian tubes, the ovaries, and that might have been the cause for your endometriosis. I don't know whether it's already been diagnosed or not, but the symptoms that you're describing are very much in keeping with endometriosis. Painful, heavy periods are typical. But no, go ahead with the transfer. Absolutely. You know, a lot of patients who come through IVF programs have never had a laparoscopy, so you don't know whether they have endometriosis or not, but they have successful pregnancies, that we know, so don't let it stop you.
What causes a blighted ovum? Several years ago, my wife miscarried after 7 weeks as a result of one.
So it's not that you miscarried as a consequence. A blighted ovum is just an empty sac in the uterus that never develops beyond a certain point, so there's no evidence of a fetal pole or a fetus or a fetal heart. So it's not that it caused the miscarriage. It was just how the pregnancy was developing.
Mm. Listener is 40, had a miscarriage last year, currently trying, to try to conceive. But I am scared about the prospect of a second.
Absolutely. I think going to see somebody, either your GP or going to a gynecology service where they might start you on aspirin and progesterone in advance or at the time of conception. There are studies that have shown that it helps, so I think that's a route. And I think, at the end of the day, we know that patients who are older have a higher risk of miscarriage. That might be due to the fact that they conceive a baby with a chromosomal abnormality. There's not enough evidence to say that categorically. But we know that with advancing maternal age, your risk of fertility goes down, your risk of miscarriage goes up, your risk of having a baby with a chromosomal abnormality goes up. They're age-related risks. There's nothing you can do about that, but certainly seek some advice about those sort of supportive therapies before you conceive.
And just finally, I did PGT testing with 3 embryos. None were good enough. This is after 4 early miscarriages. At this point, should I give up?
Not necessarily give up, but if you've done PGT, which is pre-implantation genetic testing, to see if the embryos before they're transferred into the uterus are chromosomally normal or not, if that has shown that that's not the case, then you might be looking at a donor egg scenario. But if you want to have a baby and you are willing to pursue it, you've already gone down the road of IVF, so going down the road of donor egg is probably the next logical choice.
So that's a fertility conversation, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Shane, you'll be back with us next Wednesday.
Love to answer more
of listeners' questions. Shane Higgins, Professor Shane Higgins, Master of the National Maternity Hospital. If there's anything in particular you want us to talk about, the email is lunchtimelive@newstalk.com.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.